What's going on, everybody? My name is Ivan, aka Navis from Video Game Amateurs. Alongside me is my co-host who does the most, Alyssa Rosa.
Hi. How are you doing today, Ivan?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Cannot complain. Super excited for the guests that we have on this special episode of The Save Point. And I mean, we can start off. We can introduce them if you guys want to kind of like give yourself a quick introduction.
Yeah. Whoever wants to jump in, say who you are.
I'll go first. Hi, y'all. My name is Isaac Espinosa. I am a senior intern of the New York Video Game Critics Circle. I am also assistant mentor. I also go by Naza Harmonia online, for those that may know my screen name. How y'all doing?
Well, since he went first, I'll go second. My name is Raman Gordon. I am also a senior intern with the New York Video Game Critics Circle. I'm also a mentor of sorts. I work with Isaac in some cases, and I don't really have many online tags aside from my Twitter, which is RonaldGordon18. Follow me there and see news of stuff, but it's mostly posting about Monster Hunter, Gravity Rush, and other things. So
Gravity Rush.
Monster Hunter.
Oh my gosh, we gotta talk about that later. That's just like oh, love that game. Oh my man. So there's so much to talk about, but I really want to first start off by saying the New York Video Game Critics Circle, what is it, right? Like, what is it that you guys work on? Why is it so important? Why? Right. All that is why. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the New York Video Game Critics Circle and, you know, like what is the, you know, the positive impact? That's kind of a two-part question, but let's really just focus on, you know, New York Video Game Critics Circle.
Well, if I were to say what the New York Video Game Critics Circle was or why we do what we do, it's a group of people who really want to get out and get games known. You know, you see all types of sites like IGN, Kotaku, always talking about games and, you know, what to do with games. But the Critics Circle, having worked with the Critics Circle, I can say that we're a lot more down to earth, a lot more personal. We focus a lot more so not just on games, but expressing love for games. Indies especially, we do a lot of reviews on indie games, some AAA games. We sometimes do little essays talking about different parts of games. Isaac and I have both done essays on different games that we like. Him, I think it was on Metroid just overall, or was it Dread that you did?
I did an essay on Metroid Prime.
Right.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Metroid Prime. He's a huge Metroid head. And I also did an essay on Gravity Rush talking about how much I loved it. So we mostly express and try to express our love of games and what we can do with them, what can be done. Because Isaac, you can speak on this, as I've recently been trying to hone in on the fact that connection to games is a lot more than just playing them, especially with the mentoring that we do.
Yeah. So a lot of our mentoring centers around the idea of our philosophy, which is playing with purpose, because playing with purpose dictates that we are not just playing video games for the sake of just playing them. It's about understanding why, the different factors of what it takes to enjoy a game. And that's sort of the thing that we try to create when it comes to our students, especially because our students are sort of the centerpiece of what we try to teach. And our mentoring centers around that idea of y'all should be able to think about what you enjoy about a game. And more importantly, write it down and think critically. And there are different elements to enjoying a game, but they all exist together. They don't exist in a vacuum. So we try to teach them that philosophy so that they can try to think more critically. And also, you know, just on the side, get some more experience writing, because this helps them to become better writers and eventually maybe get a job in the journalism industry or the video game industry as well.
That's super interesting that you say that. It sounds like you guys are very community-based and you really prize yourselves on, you know, making sure that the people who are coming up, the young kids, whoever they may be, are very much a part of that process. Why did you guys decide to like be a part of this? And what about it spoke to you in that way that you were like, I really want to make a change? Was it your own personal experience as kids growing up, or was it just something that you wish you had?
Well, if I may, Ronald and I are both writers. We've both been writing since about like high school. We started out with fiction stories, like sci-fi, a lot of different types of elements like that. Our imagination has always spoken to us. And when we discovered the Critics Circle in our freshman year of high school, it was sort of like a, oh my God, wow, this is literally our dream. This is literally our dream to write about video games and review them. That's like, damn, that's kind of crazy. And so we kind of stuck with the class for the remainder of the year. Our class was actually one of the first, actually the first internship that they ever did at DreamYard Preparatory. So they ended up taking a lot of us in. And by the end of our senior year, Ronald got to the internship a bit earlier than I did. But by the time that I left my senior year, we were both interns by that point with the Critic Circle. And we had a lot of experience being able to be under their wing. And it was sort of like this enlightening experience because, you know, you don't really think about video games like that before. And I guess Ronald can touch on this himself. But for me, it was like, I never really thought about video games like this before. Mm-hmm. I really always kind of just saw video games as like, not a waste of time, but also like a thing that I just sunk my time into without any thought. Now it's like, Why do I enjoy this? What it makes the grounds for me to enjoy a game like I do?
I like that.
It's definitely a lot. In my case, it was a lot of the enjoyment of games that got me into the Critic Circle because, as Isaac said, you know, we're both writers. We started writing very early on, and I've always had, you know, outrageous ideas, mostly spawned by the video games I played. And even to this day, I'm still inspired a lot by video games and what they can do. So being able to play games, not only to like play them and experience them, but to share my feelings and share my thoughts about them, that was a very mind-blowing experience to have the chance to sit down and write up a review of a game and say all that I can say and say, you know, all that I want to say about it, because there's a lot. I think my first review was of a game called Armored Core 5. I wasn't too big of an Armored Core fan. I played 2 back when the PS2 was being overpowered by the PS3, and I kind of jumped games to 5. But what really got me into it was just the whole mechanized combat and how it handled that. And I talked about that in my review, and I'm still so super excited to see Armored Core return with Fires of Rubicon coming out. So it's good to see, and it's good to have that experience. Now, having been a kid who enjoyed mech games, now I know why I enjoy mech games. It's like, there's not a lot of mech games. You get to see heavy metal warfare. You get to see giant robots slash at each other or fire guns at each other. It's a lot more than just playing a game. There's a deeper connection I have, and I get to hopefully express that one day in a review.
That's pretty awesome. I have like an offhand question, but do you guys have a dream of like ever making or writing your own game one day?
Yeah, definitely.
I think I would have said yes maybe like back in high school when I was starting out, but now I kind of, not necessarily, it would be a great experience, don't get me wrong, but I think that I'm less of interested to get into the like development in industry in video games, and I'm more so just excited now to teach people about this type of stuff. And I think that's sort of my dream, like to be able to continue being able to bring this information and knowledge to more of a crowd.
Me myself, I feel like eventually, because you know, got plenty of years. Maybe one day I might pitch an idea somewhere. I'm not the type to like sit down and learn like C# or any other coding language, but I can write a story just offhand. So maybe one day I'll write like a game plot or something like that. That'll be something, because I'm always thinking of new things to write down.
That's pretty cool.
I guess it's more for the question for Isaac. I looked at a few of your writings. One you did with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. You gave like a review on that. And also you did have an article on The Verge as well. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I'm very excited to kind of like, you know, not only talk about Pokemon, because that's obviously, you can see in my background, that's all Pokemon related. But I'm also very curious to really kind of hone in on like the DreamYard in general, and sort of how did those opportunities get you to sort of start mentoring? Like why? I'm very curious, because you guys are just starting out in this industry, or at least have done this for quite some time. But, you know, to mentor, especially have all those skills to be able to reach out and give back to the community, what made you so sure about this is sort of like the path where I want to be at, and the tools that you also utilized to get here?
Well, it's sort of like it's a bit of a loaded question, but I trust me, I will answer a loaded question.
I hope so.
Make no mistake about that. So I started out sort of the DreamYard project was sort of my introduction into mentoring because I taught elementary school kids as like an internship, like 3 days a week. I went to the DreamYard Art Center and then taught like K through five. It was fun. It was nice. It was a nice experience. The thing that sort of I took away from that, that sort of made me want to mentor more is I enjoy the lens that kids are able to give you because no one really talks about how a lot of kids have very unbiased perspectives, especially the younger ones. They have a lot of unbiased opinions and they'll give you the straight up. So they have no sense of what's right or wrong. So they can be the realist with you, if I'm being quite honest. But another part of it is, and this is the more important part, I like being part of their experiences. Like the fact that I can be a person in their life that gives them some kind of knowledge that they'll take on maybe years to come, or this will be an experience that they remember, like say a few years down the line when they're older. I think that that is an incredible thing because that's knowledge that they're going to like impart for the rest of their lives. And who knows, maybe at some point they'll go on to teach other people about that. And then they'll teach more people about that. And it's like this exponential circle that keeps growing and growing. And then the fact that I kind of grounded that and started that is sort of it's an honor, frankly, to be able to be a part of their lives and have such an influential part in their knowledge and their and like have an impact on them.
I love that, honestly, like that you're passionate about it. I love kids. So it's just like great to know that someone like you is out there, like this company and this program. There's programs out there for them to really express themselves. And if they're not experiencing that elsewhere, they have somewhere they can go to experience that. And speaking of programs, you guys have a Critics Circle program, which it goes into the community, impacts the community. Can you explain it to our listeners and people who watch this, what it is exactly and how this program impacts the community?
Yeah. So the Critics Circle program, both I and Isaac are interns there. What we do is, as recently we've been going around offering up a scholarship opportunity to the kids that take our class. The whole class is kind of structured like a little bit of a competition. So what you do for the class is you have three things that we require for you at the end of it. It's like a 10-week program. You have a poem, you have a game narrative, and you have a review. And whoever does, has like the best of the best gets the chance to win the scholarship and, you know, the chance to become an intern, much like us. And we offer this as a way to offer up, I believe, max of $10,000 towards college funds, you know, to help fund their career, whatever they choose to do, regardless of what it is. You know, you want to help get more young minds into college, get more thought into the industry. We hope to, you know, skyrocket the chances of some of younger generations to change up the demographic. I believe one of the slideshows we show was the fact that the gaming industry is full of, you know, just the norm of people, you know, males, white, and things like that. So we want to help boost, you know, people of color, women, and all those things to help change up the industry, get new faces there. And that's mainly what the Critics Circle program is all about. It's about helping get more names and more faces and more diversity into the gaming industry, regardless of how it is, even if it's as little as more reviewers talking about games. Because as long as you know how to write words, you can say all that you want about games, positive or negative, and it will have an effect somewhere. And that's the type of effect we want to have.
It also kind of extends to the places we've been. We're centered around the Bronx. So we've been around a lot of the schools, but we've also extended. Ronald hasn't been through this bit yet since he's sort of like kind of come on recently as the mentor, but we sort of tried to go to different homeless shelters as well, aside from schools, because we want to try and give that to kids that the opportunity to kids that don't have a lot. So mm-hmm. That's sort of the way that we've been trying to get back to the community. Well, it's also our lessons as well. Ronald mentioned one of the slideshows. We have multiple slideshows that we talk about different aspects of a review and what it entails, but more importantly, try to dissect our playing with purpose philosophy. Since that's something that even at an early age, regardless of them playing games or not, it just helps them think more critically, because that mm-hmm. is a skill that they will be able to take to high school and then to college and then to further on, since being able to think critically and write critically is a very important skill to have.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of wish I had this as a kid.
There's so much to digest even with that, Isaac. I think when in regards to, I believe that you were speaking with like Bronxwork Shelters, right? And I think that's where the program that you're mentioning, mm-hmm. Mothole 3 and Tapco Schools, this is, I think that's also something that you're mentoring as well. It seems like you, all of y'all have your hands, you know, in different places, all of it, which is the core of not only gaming, but also, and again, you keep saying this is purpose, there's intent with playing games. And how do we sort of, bridge that, because I think you're also working with the older adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if we kind of mentioned that. Can you give me a little bit more background on that with the adult psychology services?
Absolutely. Are you talking about like the services we give to like the elderly?
Yes. So I believe in the Senior Planet Tech Center in Manhattan, in Chelsea.
Yes. Yes. One of the things that we've been doing is that we've been exposing the elderly folk to VR. It's a bit of a wild premise, but it's sort of like a really good introduction to gaming, like for them, especially like at that age, because you know it's crazy to think that gaming has become such a centralized part of media nowadays that mm-hmm. like as you get older, you don't realize how many things are actually out there. You don't realize how many things, like how things have developed so far ahead. So it's sort of like a way to introduce them to the future, to like what the future of gaming has looked like for the past few years, because VR is sort of like it's sort of like a tech demo for the future, if you can call it mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could ever convince my grandmother to play VR.
But it's such an interesting premise to see, again, like there's so many different activities, right? There's so many different programs that you're utilizing, especially Bronx centric. Mm-hmm. Myself, coming from, you know, close to I'm from Washington Heights. So I'm very close. I'm like the bridge away to go to like to the Bronx. So I kind of grew up around that area. So it's so good to see that there's so many, you know, these gaming center programs in the Bronx to really bring, you know, and so many outreach resources too, to have these, you know, to have not only kids, but also adults. Whether it's in Chelsea or not, I think this is all great. These are all great programs that you're reaching to different people, and all regardless of like age or sex, gender, what have you. And so this is kind of like to go to the next part, because I see that there were so many different programs that you guys had, that everyone, you know, that the team had, but then COVID, right? So I'm interested to see what that transition looked like, or were you also working during that time, and how were you able to sort of navigate working with older adults? How was it navigating with kids? Would love to, you know, to get some insight on that.
I can't speak for the elderly part, but working with kids, oh man, it was a very rough transition. Like most people will answer you that question. It was a very rough transition. One of the things that, aside from the kids' whole thing, with which we can get to that in a bit, one of the biggest things that was a big transition for everybody was that the Critic Circle, the game awards had to be moved to virtual now, which is a lot more tedious of preparation, because you can't get everyone in one room and talk and chat. Everyone's got their own schedules and everyone's has to meet online, which is really, it's the online meeting stigma of the pandemic. It was rough. Everyone was doing their own things. Getting everyone on a Zoom call with the same quality, especially, was hard, to say the least. And when it came to the kids, it was rough, because aside from, it was either two things. One, it was either all of us were virtual and we were all on a meeting together, which kind of tanked, or we had to cut the program short. Like normally we would go for 8 weeks with the program. Normally we would go mm-hmm. for about like 8 to 10 weeks for the lessons, but with COVID, that was like cut down to like 6, And then every other meeting afterwards had to be virtual. So you can imagine the struggle of getting a bunch of young kids on a Zoom call together at the same time after school and expecting them all to listen properly when there's not the premise of them being able to play games after the lesson. It's sort of like they're doing like an online class, and it was rough because it didn't accommodate for everyone. It didn't accommodate for everyone at the same level. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult to sort of manage that kind of experience, but we managed to get through it, of course. And we still had moments where we were able to have our offline sessions, just not as frequently.
Well, that's good for especially the kids that, you know, don't have the technology or can't really afford that type of stuff, you know? So it's nice to know that you guys still tried to make a way for them to be a part of this program and just to experience something different. And also just, you know, like you said, inspire them, impact them in ways that you possibly could. Speaking of on that topic, have you guys ever had experiences with any of the kids where you just feel like, I wish I could do more, but they're kind of pushing back for you guys, like from you guys in the program? Does that ever happen? Do they ever feel like, I can't do this thing? And if they do feel that way, how do you guys kind of like overcome it? Because I know kids, they just, you know, they're kids. They may not feel as encouraged sometimes, or, you know, how do you guys manage that type of stuff?
Yeah, I don't think there have been that many cases. We might just be the lucky ones, but in the two places we've been mentoring at, most of the kids have been very excited, very, you know, soulful about it, because, you know, it's something new, it's something to tackle, something to grasp, and everybody has ideas. I think in Mott Hall, there was one girl who isn't that much of a gamer, and she seems interested, like she has ideas, but she doesn't speak up as much, and we're still trying to get to her in terms of opening up ideas, because we make it very open. You know, everybody has their own time to think, has their own time to talk about ideas. They're around friends, of course, so they have a place to share things. But you know, it takes a minute to step out of that comfort zone, especially when you're like not a seasoned gamer, what may seem like a seasoned gamer, so it's understandable. But yeah, we haven't had that many cases. I mean, Isaac might know of a few more than I do, but
it's less of the pushback and more of the most issue we've had is, frankly, it's a video game class. They're gonna want to play games more than right. At least there's gonna be one or two kids that want to play games exclusively and not do the writing part. But above everything, our class is educational. Class is about being able to teach the kids about these types of lessons. So the video gaming aspect is less of a factor. And that is something that we try to push right off the bat. And it doesn't get through to some of them, but eventually they kind of just, it gets integrated. They become fine with the system. And sometimes we don't even play the games because we focus so much on the writing that day. Sometimes they get a little like antsy about it, but it's never been like an issue where it's like, ugh, you know?
I guess Twitch doesn't help then, huh? Like streamers, being a streamer. I like that you guys kind of give them that opportunity. And that's the point of the whole thing, because I think a lot of the times kids will see things on their screen and be like, I just want to do that. And it takes a lot to do that, let alone make the game, write the game. And like you said, really dive into the game. So I'm sure you have the kids are probably like, what if I want to be like, you know, my favorite streamer or my favorite YouTuber who does this? And I can only imagine, because I think as a kid, I would do the same thing. I'd be like, I kind of just want to play Pokemon, please.
It's like it's sort of like a balance. It's I've always found it much easier nowadays to sort of, since we're both relatively more on the younger side, we have the ease of being in the bridge of being at their, like, both being near their age group whilst also being on the more of the professional side with like the adults. So we've been able to sort of talk with them. I've been able to talk with them more frequently, honestly, just talk about their favorite games, humor them, if you will, like, you know, to talk to them about the wildest things, let them talk things out with you And it'll be much easier because they listen to you more if you actually get the chance to chat with them, especially before the classes starts. Like being able to speak with them on a more personal level makes it so that they will listen to you more when it comes to the actual lesson.
This is, I mean, coming from ourselves, we've also done recently a program where we kind of gave an esports boot camp experience with kids in 5 different boroughs. And so we know how it is to like allow kids to sort of like flourish, or even while they may not be as proficient in Super Smash Brothers, but allow them to have to sort of see how a tournament is set up, how everything is done. And it's something that, you know, those experiences you can't take away. You can't also recreate because it's such a unique experience for each child as they get through and understand more about like gaming is not just being in a screen and playing, but there's so many different, you know, things behind it that allow to have that final product, which is to experience and have a good time with it. And you know, it's super strange. Like, we haven't really talked about the actual video game awards. There's so many different games like in the lineup. I know we're also we're mentioning and honoring Phil Spencer. And I mean, I have a few questions on that. Just really the one is, you know, we're celebrating Phil Spencer this year. He's done so much for the gaming community. And so what are some things you feel that he's done to inspire you and what you do within the community?
Well, for me, at least, I'm the Xbox fan out of the two of us. I can
Xbox.
Yeah, I can say full well that Phil's engagement with the company has founded a lot of what I do today. As you can tell by my background from Monster Hunter World, I wouldn't have gotten into Monster Hunter had it not been for the Game Pass. The Game Pass is one of my biggest investments. Every month I make sure I have the money in there to keep it going because there's a lot on Game Pass and there is so much to experience, and I wouldn't have had it without Phil Spencer. So I thank him for not only the Game Pass, but my love of Monster Hunter. I wouldn't have gotten into World if I didn't get into it while Game Pass is added on. And there's just so much he did and so much he is famed for doing, and we're glad to be able to honor him with the Legend Award because it's a big award that we give out to the big names like Hideo Kojima, Todd Howard, tons of people who deserve it, and this year it's Phil because he deserves it.
See, while I am not an Xbox person, I will openly admit that I am I am very much a Nintendo Switch fanboy. I will say one of the things that I will always respect is I don't remember the exact name at the moment, but Xbox created this accessibility controller for people that had disabilities. And that is something I sort of goes into more of like a different aspect of gaming that people don't touch on. I feel like the idea of accessibility has been lost to time. Because everyone nowadays, everyone thinks accessibility means like, oh, how easy is the game? How easy is the game? And how free is it? But they don't realize that accessibility meant at the time, like, how was this game accessible to those that were not able to play it by conventional means? We're not able to play the game normally by, you know, by our standards. Like, we all are able to play games normally, but there are people that have disabilities that can't. So the accessibility controller was sort of that thing that allowed for gamers to participate in the same beauty that Xbox brings. And that is something that I will always respect them for, because it sort of allows for the true meaning of accessibility to stay true to this day.
And it's great that you mentioned that, because 2 days ago Sony released its first accessible controller. And
really?
So yeah.
A shot at me, Ivan?
Not a shot at you. It's just that we have to give credit where credit is due, where I think Microsoft has been kind of the forefront of bringing accessibility to gamers. And I don't know if this might date myself, I doubt that it would, but there is a commercial with Xbox where they do show that you know, the controller and how others have used it. I think it was like a Super Bowl commercial, and it did make headlines. For those who are listening, I know you guys know what I'm talking about. but no, yeah, Xbox definitely has been the forefront of a lot of things, whether it be good or bad. And mm-hmm. right now, where I think, and I'm gonna say myself, because you know myself and Ron, I can definitely claim, you know, we're on the winning team. You know, I think out of biases, like we're doing okay.
Yeah, I'll give you Game Pass. Game Pass is really good. I'm not. Yeah,
oh, no, I don't, absolutely.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
love
it. I don't have PlayStation Plus or Essential or anything anymore, for obvious reasons. But unfortunately, I'm stuck to Sony just because I grew up mostly playing Sony and Nintendo. So I also do love my Switch.
Out of all the three major consoles right now, Nintendo definitely has the worst when it comes to online services. That's not up for debate at all, actually.
Mm-hmm. We all agree collectively.
Bold claim, but it's not, you know, we can't dispute it. That's what it is.
Not wrong. Game Pass is definitely the best subscription service for consoles right now. Make no mistake about that.
Yeah. Well, since we're kind of still on the topic of games, we can make it a little bit more fun. I want to know, what are your personal game of the year? I know it's everyone's going to say God of War. I just want to know what it is. It could be an indie game. I'm just saying. It could be
Xenoblade Chronicles 3. That's all I need to say.
What a legend. This is a man of fine quality taste. Let's talk okay. Real quick. You know, so, I can see you have good taste.
Yes.
This game,
tell us, please.
Oh, yo, man.
After Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, and you see the masterpiece of 3, amazing.
Here's my thing, okay? So I was recently introduced into the Xenoblade Chronicles series. I knew about 1. 2, I played through a gift from a friend, but I mainly knew it from Pyra and Emifra being in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And when it came to Xenoblade Chronicles 3, I was able to review it at launch. Oh my god. If you want a game that takes your heart out, rips it from your chest, crushes it, and then in the same sequence puts it back together and then puts it back in your chest, that's an accurate description of what Xenoblade Chronicles 3 would do to you. Because that game is an emotional roller coaster, and it is easily one of the best story, if not the best story experience that you will get on the Switch right now. It's so incredible. It's such an emotional roller coaster. The music is fantastic. The gameplay is the one aspect of it that may not be great, but it's still a really addictive loop that will keep you invested. And the story is enough to carry. If I'm being,
you might have sold me. You might have sold me on it. Wait, did you? You said you started out with 3.
I started out with 2.
Okay. You sold me. I like JRPGs.
1 is still very good. Get the deluxe edition, the ultimate edition for 1. Super good. Like, it definitely still holds up. It's like, there's no the graphics they put on these games is phenomenal. I'm like, how do you guys pump all this into a Switch game?
I don't know.
Switch exclusive, mind you.
How can Xenoblade Chronicles 3 be the game that it is, and then Scarlet and Violet came out looking like the way it did? I'm flabbergasted.
It hurts. It does hurt. Pokemon fans around the world are like, oh, come on.
Me personally. I took that personally.
Yeah. Ronald, how about you? What was your game of the year? You have to sell me on this. You have to make me want to buy this or play it. And if it's Monster Hunter, I'm going to do it probably. So go ahead.
Okay. So I'm split between 3. It would be Monster Hunter, although I didn't get to play Rise last year because the Switch for me was a weird console. I wanted a mobile console. So I bought the Switch, and then they came up with the Switch Lite. So I was like, that's what I wanted mostly. So I gave my Switch to a close friend, and I haven't picked another Switch up. So this is a tragic tale. My game of the year, in my heart of hearts, should be Elden Ring, because I played it early on. I got it from my brother. He gifted it to me. He's a real cool dude. And I sunk hundreds of hours into it. I played through the world of the Lands Between. It was beautiful. I got to Leyndell. I got to nearly every place. I was only missing like one place, and I was having fun. I was enjoying it. There was a character. It was my first FromSoft game. Like, you know, you see all the Dark Souls. I've always been interested in wanting to play Dark Souls and Sekiro, and Elden Ring is my first FromSoft. And as I was there, I'd beaten most of the challenges. I'd beaten Radahn, Rykard, Melania. I'd gotten to all of them, and I was right there at the second to last boss, freaking Horlu, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my save got corrupted and I lost that game.
No.
Yeah, my hundreds of hours are still gone to this day.
I would never touch that game ever again.
I wouldn't do it either. Yeah, yeah.
It's so hard for me too, because I'd have to essentially wipe my whole memory.
That's why I stopped playing Fire Emblem games. I played Fire Emblem Awakening. I was on like the second to last chapter. Just something got corrupted file, and I said, you know what?
So
I don't even need to play the series anymore. I think I'm done.
You're so.
I think I'm genuinely done. That, I don't even care. Yeah, I time sinks like that. I get it. Same thing with Final Fantasy X. That happened to me 2 times. I'm like, I'm good. I'm okay.
Luckily, my love of FromSoft hasn't died. I actually picked up Bloodborne, and it's really good. So, but Elden Ring in my heart of hearts would be game of the year. Except I also picked up Plague Tale Requiem. You might have seen it.
I did see that. Yep, I saw your review on that.
Yeah, I did a review of Requiem and of Innocence, and I loved both of them because they tell a really good looping story of like hardships during the plague. The first game is like more stealth based. It's an indie, mm-hmm. so they didn't have a lot of room to mm-hmm. work with, and it had a lot of character going for it. Like it had class and its style and everything, and they really boosted it out because Requiem feels less like an indie game. It feels like a AAA. They got so much more development, so much more money, and with that comes so much more story, because in the first game plays Amicia, she's like she's only a girl against like armored knights and everything, so you can't do anything aside from stealth. But in the second game, Amicia, she's more hardened, she's more battle hungry, and she's more like angry at the world, because it's like she loses a lot in the first game, and it just keeps going to a point where it's her breaking point in the second game, and she goes through a whole arc where she gets more angry, she gets visceral, you can actually start taking hits, you can actually start taking out opponents outside of stealth, and it's a really good character arc that I really love, and I'm still urging to finish Requiem to this day. And with the whole Elden Ring thing, Requiem feels like it might be my game of the year because of Plague Tale. Fair. My love of Plague Tale, and it's really good. It's a really good pair of games, and I wish more people play it because it's a really good telling of a story and a character change. Of course, people are going to play Elden Ring regardless.
Yeah,
but if I can say anything to Plague Tale, it's that it's a great come up story from indie to like AAA feeling, because Plague Tale, it got its own custom PC from Microsoft. It got a lot. And it's great to see a small like indie company just make it to that point.
And, yeah. It's always inspiring, but I also think that now I also have to play this game, which I think I do have it downloaded already. So it's interesting that you brought it up. Thank you. Yeah, how about Ivan? Ivan, what was your game of the year this year?
Certainly not Pokemon Scarlet Violet. But before I talk about my game of the year, I do want to just mention I love the passion that oozes from both Ron and Isaac in regards to like, you know, the game of the year. I think it's only a reflection of like, as writers, you know, we do talk about like gaming being an art as a medium, and the way that you, from both your writing styles, while vastly different, there is something to love, because it feels like you are critics. You guys do take this path, you take your passion very seriously, and I can really understand and gauge what you're looking for like thematics, for like, you know, like storyline. It's super awesome to hear that even through your writing, so kudos to both of you. And so now you're gonna not enjoy my game of the year.
Nah, man, go for it. I'm curious.
Mine is gonna be bad too, don't worry.
I'm thinking about like the games that I played this year that I really like. I like this game, and you guys are gonna hate me on this, but I loved it. Strangers of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin.
Really?
So, their face.
They're like, what the?
I've never even heard of it. So
really? So it's a remake of Final Fantasy 1, but it's more action and adventure. I'm a sucker when it comes to class systems. Anything, any role-playing game, I love them. So I'm not really here for the storyline, although the story was a little convoluted in Square Enix style. I do like how difficult it was. It is the same team Ninja who created it through Square Enix. So, you know, like a very Ninja Gaiden series, it's going to be very hard. And it is. Even on normal mode, I was still getting clocked, right? But there is the multiplayer aspect where you can bring other friends to like fight certain bosses. It's like the best way to describe what that game is. It is Wicked for Final Fantasy 1. So you're seeing it from the other side. So you're not the hero. You're actually the villain. Mm. So it's really cool. And I'm never into villain origin stories. Alyssa can definitely vouch on that. I'm more like the, I'm more of the Deku or Bakugo, you know, of
I'm
us.
I'm the villain.
Yeah.
They're laughs and Shigaraki being my favorite character.
Oh, see? Like, yeah.
I can't, we won't talk about that. We won't talk about
that. I can't relate. I can't relate. You know?
Yes.
I can only win. So that's my, that's one I even have like a playthrough on that. I think that's going to be posted up soon, but I love it.
I need to be more like the both of you because I should probably care. I mean, I do care about story and gameplay and stuff, but I should just care about myself enough to like actually stop my addiction. So Ivan knows this. Everyone who knows me knows this. My game of the year is something that shouldn't be considered a game of the year, but it's Genshin Impact.
I see.
I am very much in the trenches. Down horrendous, but I really am enjoying the game for the gameplay. I have no idea what's going on in the story. I'm pretty sure it's great. I think it must be fantastic because it's going for so long.
I'm pretty sure, having heard Genshin explained from my little sister, used to be a big fan. I'm pretty sure not even the people in Genshin know what's happening.
No. Mm-hmm. That's why it's going to become an anime, to make it make sense, I guess. But I love it gameplay wise. But outside of that, I really didn't embark on like the same journeys, so I feel like I missed out. So now I want to play both the games you guys said. Sorry, Ivan, you know me, I'm more of a Kingdom Hearts person versus a Final Fantasy person, but I think I really need to try out Xenoblade 3 and Plague Tale.
Xenoblade for sure, I highly recommend. Like
2023 is seeming like it's going to be a very big year when it comes to games, especially for the Switch. As you already know, Tears of the Kingdom is finally coming, and That game's gonna be in, like, nothing but immense heat.
So is that the game you're mostly looking forward to in 2020?
I would say so, yes. And also potentially any Pokemon DLC that may come for Scarlet and Violet, because we're gonna get DLC. I would not be surprised if we got DLC for that game, because it just seems like ripe for the chance to explore more of the Paldea region. So. Mm-hmm. I'd say those are my two hopes. Honestly, I haven't kept up with what's coming, to be frank. I haven't kept up with a lot of what's coming in terms of announcements. My main thing, please, just give me a crumb of Metroid Prime 4 news.
I knew it.
He's Metroid Prime 4.
I have it. The only news that we've gotten in the past almost half a decade is the fact that the game was delayed. That's all we got. Please just give me a crumb of news. That's all I ask. I don't care if the game comes in 2020. We got Pikmin 4. We got Pikmin 4 in 2022. And it's gonna
no one thought would happen.
It's gonna join the Nintendo games of logo only.
Honestly, yes. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry you're down bad. Metro fans are down bad here.
How about you, Ronald? What's like your most anticipated game for 2023?
Armored Core 6. I'm here for the mechs. That's
wow. Okay. That's like, I need more.
That's it.
Yep. I need more. You must have been hype when you saw that.
I was so hype. Yeah. Because it was so unexpected. I was watching live.
Right.
I was trying to get that Steam Deck, but it didn't happen. Pretty sure it was all bots. But
oh yeah, no,
gotta be. Yeah, it hasn't been. Yeah.
But then the trailer showed, and I was like, what is this? And then they showed the mechs. I'm like, no. And then they showed the name. I'm like, no.
Yeah, it was definitely a nice little surprise from the series. What do I you know what I'm excited for? Probably. So there's two games I'm excited for. Final Fantasy 16. Right. Yeah, I'm playing that on the PC. Like, that is the pure PC experience. My computer's decked and ready for that. And then Lies of P. It's that Pinocchio game.
Oh, I forgot about that game.
Yeah, yeah, they're so good. It looks so good. It looks so good
in the trailers. Yeah,
yeah, it's like a lot going on, but I'm like, yo, I'm ready for this. Like, what is it? Like it's a steampunk. It's like a steampunk like looking thing. It's sick. Those are definitely the top games. Oh, then One Piece Odyssey just came out. So like, I guess I don't.
Oh yeah, that's the One Piece game. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, those are right.
One of these games exist.
Yeah, they do exist. It's an RPG. That's why I'm like, I'm interested about.
Yeah, it kind of looks a little interesting. A little interesting. I'm gonna be a little bit of a nerd, but I've never played Persona 4 Golden, so I'm very excited to play it. That's like one of my anticipated games this year.
So good. So good.
Persona 5 Royal, I loved. I played too many times, so I just need to switch over. But I also think I'll have to go with Zelda too, because I can't really remember what else is coming out outside of that that stood out to me, but Zelda for sure. And maybe Redfall if it comes out this year.
Oh, we'll I completely forgot. This isn't technically like a game per se. It's a game that's already out, but it's DLC. See, I'm a big fighting game person. Mm-hmm. I've played Super Smash Bros. I've played Guilty Gear Strive, Rev 2. Although my career in Rev 2 is very, very much dead. The game I've been most into as of late has been DNF Duel.
Really?
Too bad Brand is not here.
Yeah.
DNF Duel is super fun. I love it so much. It has been an incredible experience for me. I've just enjoyed it to no end. And the DLC is coming out this year. We're finally getting we've finally got mention of a season pass, and we finally got our first look at the new character Spectre. She looks super awesome. She's one of the most popular classes from DFO, which is the main IP that dungeon that DNF Duel takes inspiration from. So I'm excited to see how they're going to implement Spectre into the game, and also to see what characters they come out with for the rest of the year.
That's pretty awesome. I didn't even know that they were having DLC, so that's good to know.
Yeah, no,
that's
they had a huge balance patch recently. All buffs. No, they didn't nerf any characters. They just buffed everybody.
I love that system. Just no nerfs. Just keep buffing people. They'll get better.
You know, it made so many people get the game. So many new people are playing the game now, and it's super nice to see someone that was one of the 35 people playing the game in the entire world on the Steam charts. It feels nice to see.
He was around when it was dying. He was there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, wow.
It feels nice to see that game finally getting the life it deserves, and like seeing a bunch of new life getting breathed into it.
Yeah, I love when that happens too, because it's like some games definitely deserve that. They don't need to be on the wayside and just die. And then like the community who plays it, you're just like, well, I would like more stuff, please. Not everybody can be like Street Fighter. Are you excited for that though?
Oh, that's right. I forgot that the beta ended recently. I didn't get to play the beta. I'm waiting for the main game to see how I feel. I've never been really a Street Fighter person personally, but the graphics on Street Fighter 6,
godlike.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for Street Fighter, but I'm more of a Tekken guy. Tekken and King of Fighters myself.
Eight actually.
That's scheduled for like late 2023.
Listen, if it comes this year, it's over.
He's a legend. He is a legend. If he can get that done, which I know, like, that's who he is, like, for the community. Like, he just trolls and he just like, yeah, nah, it's coming out randomly. He's going to pull Beyonce. That's why everyone's waiting for him to pull drop Tekken 8, like, before Street Fighter. And if he does, legend. That's what I'm hoping.
I still can't believe that man showed up to Evo, literally went into the announcer's booth, announced Tekken 8, and said nothing and then left.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's legendary. Only he could do that.
He just showed up when the world needed the most. He vanished. Just like that.
Yeah, Harada got me buying Supreme Tekken, but I need the Tekken 8. All right, I don't need Supreme. I need the game. All right, I know Harada listens to this, so it's okay.
Yeah, of course, naturally.
Naturally.
Oh, I forgot. My other game would be Resident Evil 4. I love horror games. Yeah, I love horror games. So that'll be my top three.
Isn't Dead Space Remake coming out too?
Is it?
Isn't that this month?
Yeah, I think so.
I might have to play that. I forgot about that. Yeah. All right.
We're out here lost in the sauce on games.
Yeah.
Just to kind of bring it back. You know, some few more questions. You know, we're gonna be, I think myself and another partner of mine, Brandon, aka SB, aka Brandon Life, he'll be an attendee as well for the New York Game Critics Awards. What can we expect? What can viewers and attendees expect
on the upcoming show. Do you guys have any insights? Do you have anything you can spill? Spill the tea.
If it's like every other year, I'd say you are expecting a couple game announcements. I honestly don't know which ones there will be. Like, there will be probably a few indie game announcements, sort of like the Game Awards in LA. You can expect a lot of funny reels. One of my personal favorite things that they've done over the course of the year of all the Game Awards has been I think the host of the show does his best deaths in video games. So he goes and looks back at all of the game overs and deaths that he's had over the year, which is honestly just really funny. And it can be very relatable too, I will note, depending on what game it is. And that's one of my favorite reels of the show. But other than that, you can expect a lot of commemorations toward, I think I said that word right. For games, and more importantly for the communities that center around them. That's sort of like the vibe that we've always tried to go with the Game Awards, the idea that it's not just the games themselves, it's the people that made them and the people behind the team, the communities that bring these games to life. That's a very big part of any game, frankly, and that's something that we try to celebrate when it comes to the Game Awards.
As Harold himself has said, the Game Awards in LA has the glitz, but we here in New York have the soul.
Ooh.
I like that. I know I live in LA, but I like that.
It's okay. She's New York.
I'm a New Yorker. I just live in LA, but I like that.
That was some sauce. That was sauce, but I get
that
it.
That was smooth.
Yeah, it was smooth. That was smooth.
That was smooth. And honestly, that's what kind of stands out to me about this award show, because I just want to know, like, how did you guys, or if you did take part in any of this, like, planning and stuff, but how did you guys come up with, like, the idea, like, the names for the categories? It's right. So personable. It's like, if you're from New York, you're like, oh my God, no one ever does that. So
I think Harold was the main one that sort of made the names, I will say. So I don't think we can touch much on that, since me and Ronald sort of joined when the Game Awards were already, like, I think, what, in their fifth year, I think?
Yeah, just about. I actually talked with her earlier about this question, because he and I were running through them, and he said, it was mainly that we wanted to make it more, you know, centric to New York. We wanted to make it feel at home, because, you know, it shouldn't be the NY Game Awards just a name. You know, you have to express our love of the city. So, you know, we have the A-Train Award for Best Mobile Game, because where else are you going to play mobile games but on the trains here and all those different
things. I like
things.
That it was the A-Train. Like, y'all chose the A train and not any other train. I actually have a tier list of New York trains. Would love to tell y'all about that. But top tier A train. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I'm good with that. The blue line.
Yeah. It's definitely feel to it.
I loved it. I was just like, I was looking at the categories and I was like, why doesn't every award show do this? And it's obviously me just being me. And I'm like, so nice. So nice. I guess, you know, maybe, do you guys have an indie game that really stood out to you this year too? We didn't really talk about like a lot of AAAs, obviously, but was there like a specific indie game this past year? For me, it was Tunic. Wow. So
Tunic is definitely up there. Yeah. For me, I don't know if you can count it as an indie because it has so much funding, but Plague to Requiem, that one stands out a lot because it's a come up story from indie to, you know, from rags to riches, that type of thing.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
I still count it. Yeah. It's fine.
And there have been a lot of good ones recently. I think you can go ahead.
I really don't know, because I think the only one that I think it's technically an indie game is what is it? Mosh 2. It's like the VR, like a VR game. It's like Mosh Book 2. It's I didn't play the first one, but it's really freaking cute.
Oh, okay, cool.
You can control this tiny little mouse.
Mouse, yeah. There's just
and the VR aspect, while it's not like other VR games where it's like it's very immersive, it's very storybook-esque, which I found really charming when I played it.
This is super cute.
It's really cute.
It's very wholesome and cute. I love this.
It's literally like you're watching like a storybook like unfold, like a pop-up book. Literally like you're watching it unfold right in front of you. And it's like, it's a very charming experience. It's not, it has nice bits of gameplay where you can, where that's where sort of like the VR elements go in, where you can kind of interact with elements of the world as you're playing and as you get more abilities. So, you know, I'd say it's the, even if it's technically by default, I'd still say it's up. It's a really good indie game that I played this year.
That's fun. Cool. Ivan, do you have any other questions?
I don't. I did want to say Exodiac. Exodiac is a great indie game. It is Star Fox, like from Super Nintendo days, but the music, a bangers. You know, the gameplay, super great. Is it hard? Absolutely. It's everything I wanted. But yeah, that's a shooter game. In terms of other questions, I feel like we've hit pretty much all the points. We've added extra questions. We got to understand, you know, like DreamYard. We understand your writing styles, you know, like what makes, you know, games fun. And most importantly, why we do what we do, you know, like why games, and there's a purpose and everything for it. So I think I'm good on the questions. Do you have anything else to add, Alyssa?
No, I'd have to agree. Honestly, you guys pretty much reframed my mind and how I'm going to like play games now, where it's like, I can't just play them just to play them. Like I should play them, dissect them, understand them. And really it is about an experience at the end of the day, but like there's also pros and cons to a game and I should pay attention to those too, so I could help impact in the future. And also very much interested in your program. I have a little cousin. He's still little, but like depending on what he's interested in, I think it's important because he does live in the Bronx. So it's really cool. And whenever I'm out there, if you do volunteer work at all, I would love to, honestly, just help in any which way that I can.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
But yeah, I don't really have much questions. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You guys crushed it. And I definitely want to know more, you know, even after this. And I'm assuming I'll see both of you at the awards.
Of course.
Most assuredly. Yeah.
Oh, then we're definitely gonna have a great time. Definitely make sure to reach out to both of you then. Yeah. You're going to see myself alongside with one of the other co-hosts.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's such a pleasure to speak to y'all.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pleasure being able to speak to you guys, because it's a lot to talk about, you know, the program and everything that we do, and it's a great opportunity to be able to spread the word, especially with other New York founded businesses surrounding games and everything like that, because, you know, it helps. It helps a lot.
It does. It does. All right. Want to wrap up the end of the episode, Ivan, since you started it?
This is where I lean on you, because how do
me?
We?
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you both for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We are the Safe Point. It's been a minute, honestly. We took a break from the holidays and my brain is mush. So, but yeah, thank you guys again. And before we do hop off, let people know where they can find you. If you're okay with it, you could just be like, don't find me. I don't want to be found. Let the people know.
I'll go first. I mentioned it earlier. The main place you can find me is on my Twitter. It's at RonaldGordon18. It's all lowercase. You'll see it. It's like a little picture of a Monster Hunter symbol. Recently, I've been talking a lot about the Game Awards. I've been announcing some of the nominees, congratulating them, getting in touch with them. Other than that, nothing but Monster Hunter memes, Gravity Rush appreciation, all that stuff. And sometimes my reviews get posted up there. You can also find the Critic Circle's Twitter. It's also at NYVGCC. It's there too. We've got all types of posts and stuff to look at outside of just reviews. We got news on interviews that we've done, got all types of things on the awards and everything under the sun.
You can find me at, I mentioned it before, but I go by Nazo Harmony online. So, and by the way, that's N-A-Z-O for the first name. Harmony is a bit easier to spell. You can find me at Nazo Harmony on Twitter. The at is just Nazo Harmony. And you can find me also on twitch.tv/Nazo Harmony. I don't stream regularly. I don't stream I don't have a consistent schedule or anything, but I just stream whenever, you know, the vibe feels right. Just just get games going and just to play whatever feels nice that day. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
No, I totally get that.
Yeah, he gets it.
I understand it too.
Cool. Yeah, that's the episode of The Save Point. The New York Game Awards can be watched online on January 17th, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the New York Video Games Critics Circle's Twitch and YouTube channels, linked in the description.
Tickets are still available, and you can find that link at newyorkgamecritics.com.
Next week, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So yes. Watch it. I'm going to be watching. Ivan will be there. Ronald and Isaac will be there. So you guys should just look for them all in the audience. But yeah, thank you guys.
Bravo. Thank you.